Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, July 23rd. Hospital policy leads to hostility. Midland Health CEO worries spike could lead to more visitation rules, by Stuart Doreen. Midland Health CEO Russell Myers said this week that hospital employees have experienced a good deal of hostility from people screened at the hospital. Myers said Midland Memorial Hospital follows regulations set by the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, and that is a reason for restrictions and conditions currently in place, including the need to wear a mask while inside the hospital. He also said he worries about more pushback if more changes are required by the spike in COVID-19 cases because of the increased presence of the Delta variant in Midland County. "We are told we have to be very, very careful about exposure inside the hospital," Myers said during the Midland Unified Command Team conference call Wednesday. "It's very important to recognize that those are rules that are intended to protect our patients, primarily, and we can't back down from them. They are absolutely mandated by federal law, by the regulations that keep us open, and we hope that our community can understand it. If we're not able to gain some better understanding on that, and if the spike doesn't moderate over the next few days, we will almost certainly have to further restrict visitation back to some of the more restrictive rules we had early on in the pandemic." The COVID patient population has increased at Midland Memorial from 4 around the July 4th holiday to 24 Wednesday, including 5 in critical care. Myers said that the COVID population increase is happening at the same time as an increase in the overall census. Myers said Wednesday that hospital officials expect census numbers to grow for at least another 2 to 3 weeks. Myers said there is some capacity to deal with an increased COVID presence, but the universal care unit used previously in the pandemic doesn't have the staff at this point. He said Midland Health leaders have put in an order for travel nurses and other medical personnel, recognizing we're almost certain to need it as the spike continues in the days ahead. "It's extremely difficult and costly to staff up a new unit," Myers said, "about $56,000 in additional cost every week." Myers also added, "Midland Memorial has ample supplies of personal protective equipment. Midland Health is prepared to take the kinds of actions taken in the past to reduce elective admissions so that patients who don't absolutely have to be in the hospital can stay home and allow us to take care of COVID patients that have to be at MMH for the community's best interest. Midland Health is managing its ability and willingness to accept patients and transfers from other hospitals. As of Wednesday, 75% of COVID patients were from Midland. We have to manage and serve our own community first," Myers said. "If the numbers keep going up, we'll look for other ways to empty beds, shuffle people around, and go right back to what we were able to do in the worst of the pandemic," Myers said. "We certainly don't want to. Our staff are as tired and burnt out on COVID preparation and work as the whole community is." Midland Health Visitation Policy. Every visitor support person who enters the Midland Memorial Hospital main campus will be screened using the CDC-recommended questions. No visitor support person will be allowed into the MMH main campus if they are experiencing illness symptoms, fever, chills, cough, shortness of breath, new loss of taste or smell, or headache. All visitors support persons coming to the MMH main campus will be required to have a face covering, such as a mask, scarf, or other fabric covering their nose and mouth at all times in the building, including the patient's room, perform frequent hand hygiene, and restrict their visit to only the patient's room as much as possible. No children or person under 18 years of age will be permitted at the MMH main campus unless they need to receive medical treatment or have been emancipated as an adult and are here in a parental spousal capacity, Extenuating circumstances can be discussed with the clinical manager of the unit. Please note the above-mentioned policy and processes impact the Midland Memorial Hospital main campus and do not apply to non-hospital locations. F. Marie Hall Outpatient Center, Legends MOB, Physician's Office, etc. Local gas prices fall closer to $3 a gallon. Report indicates city's average is the second highest after Odessa, by Stuart Doreen. The average price of gasoline in Midland dropped more than the state average this week, but remained more than $3, according to the report from AAA Texas. The organization shows Midland's average fell 2 cents to $3.02, which is the second highest average in the state, trailing only $3.04 in Odessa. Midland and Odessa are the only two larger metropolitan areas of the 27 listed in the AAA Texas report, with averages at or above $3. Drivers in El Paso and Texarkana also are paying averages at or above $2.90, at $2.97 and $2.91, respectively. Demand for retail gasoline remains strong across the United States as more people are traveling this summer compared to 2020, according to AAA Texas. Oil Price Information Service data shows that U.S. gasoline sales climbed 3.6% week over week. According to the Energy Information Administration, regional fuel supply levels increased slightly, as did Gulf Coast refinery utilization from the week prior, the report stated. Crude oil prices are much more expensive now than they were last year, which is why retail gasoline prices are nearly $1 more per gallon on average. The cost of crude makes up roughly half the cost of what we pay at the pump. Crude oil prices have rebounded from the steep losses seen early in the week. Across the region, the average price in El Paso dropped 3 cents, and the average in Abilene fell 2 cents to $2.88. Other price changes included 1 cent drops in Amarillo and Lubbock to $2.79. The price in San Angelo rose 3 cents to $2.82. The cheapest average of any larger metropolitan area in the state was $2.75 in the Red River community of Sherman-Denison. The average there dropped 6 cents week over week. AAA Texas reported Midland paid an average of $2.08 a gallon around this time last year, while the state average was $1.90. Since January 1st, the average in Midland is 95 cents higher, while the state average is up 89 cents, according to AAA Texas. More events slated for Midland. Friday, Popsicles in the Park, 10 a.m., Graffa Park. Family Fridays, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., Museum of the Southwest. Party on the Patio, 7 to 11 p.m., Ranchland Hills Golf Club. Cities Movies in the Park, Onward, Beale Park. The movie will start at dusk. Don't forget your lawn chairs. Friday and Saturday, Community Fest, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., MLK Community Center. Swimming, noon to 7 p.m., Doug Russell Aquatic Center and Washington Aquatic Center. Summer Mummers, 7:30 p.m., Yucca Theater. Baseball, Midland Rockhounds versus Corpus Christi, 7 p.m., Momentum Bank Ballpark. Saturday, Downtown Farmers Markets, 8 a.m. to noon, the Museum of the Southwest. Christmas in July, Salvation Army Bake Off, 11 a.m., online event for Salvation Army. Pints for Pencils Benefits, 311 Ministries, 5 p.m. Eccentric and Brewing Company, 1402 Cotton Flat Road. October's After Hours Full Moon Art and Open Mic, 7 p.m., 3302 West Illinois Avenue. Midland Scottish Rite Association Quarterly Meeting, 7:30 p.m., Midland Masonic Temple, 1600 West Wall Street. Saturday and Sunday, Solstice Live, noon, Texas Street, Odessa. Swimming, 1 to 8 p.m., Washington Aquatic Center and Doug Russell Aquatic Center. Sunday, baseball, Midland Rockhounds versus Corpus Christi, 2 p.m., Momentum Bank Ballpark. Angel and the Bad Men, 7 p.m., lawn concert at Museum of the Southwest. An inside look at Seance's first fine dining pop-up by J.C. Lewis. Midland's first premier dining pop-up hosted its first dinner Monday at Shack in the Back. Seance looks to create a 6-plus course menu every couple of months. The chef-driven menu highlights seasonal ingredients with handcrafted dishes, served straight from their kitchen. Chef Rakim Samuel, Chef Maxwell Warner, and Michaela Calipio own the endeavor. The first menu featured the following: Amuse Bouche, Pike Place Razor Clam, Finger Lime, Sweet Onion, Guava, Chile paired with Champagne. First course, Sweet Potato Puree, New Caledonia Blue Prawn, Apple, Scallion, Parsley Oil paired with, and Mint Spritzer. Second course, Rabbit Confit, Agnolotti, Broad Beans, Summer Vegetables, Onion Sous Bees, paired with a sparkling yuzu-infused Sancerre. Third course, Maine Lobster, Pastry, Pea Cream, Radish, Carrot, Leek, and Laurel Emulsion, paired with Los Nopales Soleado. Intermezzo, Strawberry, Powdered Lime Snow, Prosecco Espuma. Fourth course, Fairman Iberico Secreto, Jerusalem Artichoke, Morel Mushroom, Marigold Sauce, Spanish Salsita, paired with Los Nopales Indian Summer. Fifth course, Sous Vide Beef Tongue, Tancho Reyes Lion's Mane, Mushrooms, Thai Basil, Pomegranate, Leek Ash, Edible Flowers paired with Los Nopales La Tierra Dessert, Verona Raspberry Inspiration, Passion Fruit, White Chocolate, Cacao Sponge Cake, Caramel, Edible Gold paired with Kona Iced Cafe Latte. Closing, Casanova's Blanco, Buzz Button, Lime, and Calamansi. Read about all Seance plans to be in the upcoming Small Bites. Visit their website at www.seancemtx.com/. Kane's Giving Away Free Chicken Finger Tuesday by J.C. Lewis. National Chicken Finger Day is July 27th, and Raising Cane's is giving away one free chicken finger to customers. When customers order an adult combo meal via the Cane's mobile app on Tuesday, they can get a free chicken finger. The restaurant was founded on the premise of making the highest quality chicken finger meals anywhere. Raising Cane's focuses on preparing and serving high-quality chicken finger meals that create a level of quality unmatched. Raising Cane's created National Chicken Finger Day in honor of its 100% premium white meat chicken tenderloins that are marinated, hand-battered, and cooked to order. Midland Inspires makes first $100,000 donation after a vote. At their annual meeting on July 12th, members of Midland Inspires, a local women's philanthropy, voted to select Family Promise of Midland as the recipient of their first $100,000 grant. Excitement mounted at the meeting as ballots were counted and recounted. The initial vote was a tie between Family Promise and the Midland Rape Crisis and Children's Advocacy Center, according to reports. Finally, the tie was broken by a single vote. Family Promise was elected to receive Midland Inspires' $100,000 grant and 2-year partnership. Family Promise of Midland seeks to end homelessness one family at a time. To learn more, please go to familypromiseofmidland.com. We are very excited to be Midland Inspires' first community partner and grateful for this opportunity, said Tom Miller, executive director of Family Promise. A check presentation was held Monday at Family Promise of Midland, 2908 West Ohio Avenue. Brenda Harrison, president of Midland Inspires, said, "The closeness of the vote reflected the excellence of both finalists. Either would have been an excellent choice, and our members clearly struggled to decide between two outstanding proposals." Midland Inspires is a community of women who seek to inspire the quality of life in Midland, Texas, through high-impact, lifelong giving. To learn more, please go to MidlandInspires.org. Jury sentences man to 20 years for burglary. A Midland County jury sentenced a 28-year-old California man to 20 years in prison for burglary of a habitation, according to a statement from the Midland County District Attorney's Office. William Frazier had been found guilty for burglary of a habitation, a felony, and assault, family violence, with a previous conviction, a misdemeanor. After 4 hours of deliberation, Frazier also was ordered to serve 365 days in county jail for the misdemeanor assault. The evidence presented in the case showed that on November 10, 2019, officers were called out to an apartment complex in reference to an assault. The victim had broken up with the defendant but ran into Frazier, who attempted to walk with her back to her apartment. They began to argue and he began to assault her, according to the DA's statement. A third-party witness saw the assault and called 911. The next morning, the defendant came back to the victim's apartment and kicked open the dead-bolted door, shattering the door frame. He grabbed her by her hair and pulled her into the living room, throwing her onto the couch. He began to stomp her with his feet and punched her with his fists. The victim's initial 911 call recorded her screams. He then walked to the bedroom and began to go through her things. The victim took this opportunity to escape, but the defendant ran after her and dragged her back into the apartment by her hair. Once back in the apartment, he hit her again. He then grabbed various items, including her cell phone, and ran out the door. The victim borrowed a neighbor's cell phone to call 911. The defendant was later arrested in California on the warrant. The range of punishment for burglary of a habitation is 2 to 20 years in prison. The range of punishment for the misdemeanor assault family violence is up to 1 year in county jail. During punishment, the defendant testified that he had committed battery while in California, as well as additional thefts and DUIs out of Nevada and California. The case was prosecuted by Midland County Assistant District Attorneys Evans Miller and Kyle McArdle. The trial was held in the 238th District Court and presided over by Judge Elizabeth Leonard. Obituaries and death notices from the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Friday. Ernest Stephen Steve Whittington, February 4, 1957 to April 20, 2021. Steve passed away quietly on April 20, 2021 after suffering a brain aneurysm. He was with friends at the time. Steve was the last surviving member of his immediate family, with parents and siblings passing before him. The Southwest Transplant Alliance graciously thanks him for his generous donation of bone and tissue in an effort to help better or sustain the lives of others through his own life. There are no services planned. Odessa Paynes was born to the union of Geraldine and Jim Payne on September 24, 1943, in Ellis County, Texas. She passed away peacefully at Midland Memorial Hospital on July 19th after a lengthy illness. Odessa was the ninth of 10 children. Preceding her in death was her husband Eugene Paynes, her parents, her brothers Elmo Payne, Joseph Payne, Cicero King, and Johnny Payne, her sisters Lila May Payne, Myrtle White, Martha Moore, and Annie May Washington. She leaves to cherish her memory her daughters, Kimberly Walker of Houston, Yvette Rabb, and husband Danny of Haslett, Texas, 2 grandchildren, 3 great-grandchildren, 1 sister, Amy Williams of Dallas. She also leaves a host of nieces, nephews, and other family and friends. A visitation will be held from 5 to 8 p.m. on Friday, July 23rd, at Combest Family Funeral Homes in Tahoka. A celebration of life service will be held at 1 p.m. Saturday, July 24th, at First United Methodist Church in Tahoka, with burial to follow at Neville's Memorial Cemetery. Freddie A. Villa of Stanton passed away July 13th. He is survived by his wife, Marianne Villa, and a brother, Sammy Villa. Cremation services have been chosen and a memorial site will be held at a future date. Arrangements are entrusted to Stanton Memorial Funeral Home. Ronnie Allen Griffith, 39, of Midland, passed away on July 9th. in Turlock, California. He is survived by 7 children, Marcus Griffith, Christian Griffith, Jacqueline Griffith, Bailey Griffith, Chastity Jimenez, Brianna Dickens, and Deasia Douglas. His mother, Amelia K. Grant Griffith of Midland, and 2 siblings. Visitation will be held on July 23rd from 1 to 4. The family will receive visitors from 4 to 7 at American Heritage Funeral Home in Midland. Funeral services will be held on Saturday, July 24th at Macedonia Baptist Church in Midland. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory.
This is Reed, and this is the Odessa American for Friday, July 23rd, 2021. Doctor, Delta a threat to all. Every COVID patient admitted to the critical care unit at Medical Center Health System during the past several months has not been vaccinated. That's the sobering news critical care intensivist Dr. Alejandra Garcia Fernandez bluntly shared during a news conference held at MCH on Thursday. Quote, we have not had 0 patients admitted to CCU that has already been vaccinated, end quote, said Garcia Fernandez, who works directly with critically ill patients. Quote, if that's not enough proof that the vaccine works, I don't know what else to tell you, end quote. Garcia Fernandez is among a growing number of health officials in Ector County who are sounding the alarm for more residents to get vaccinated. Not only are the number of residents testing positive for COVID-19 spiking again, an increasing number of those cases during the past month have turned out to be the more dangerous Delta variant. In June, MCH admitted 9 patients who tested positive for the Delta variant. MCHS Director of Public Relations Trevor Tankersley said during Thursday's news conference, that number is expected to increase significantly for July, when those test results, which are conducted in Austin, are released within the next 2 weeks. Health officials from MCH and Odessa Regional Medical Center earlier this week said they believe most current COVID cases during the past month are the Delta variant. During the news conference, Garcia Fernandez declined to even talk about the need for people to step up precautions, such as resume wearing face coverings, washing hands frequently, and avoiding large gatherings. Quote, we're past that discussion, end quote, Garcia Fernandez said. Quote, we need to talk about the community getting vaccinated. 60% of Ector County residents are not vaccinated. That's alarming, end quote. Until about 80% of the county gets vaccinated, COVID will remain a threat to people's lives and the economy, Garcia Fernandez said. Garcia Fernandez and Tankersley acknowledged that healthcare officials are frustrated that so many people continue to refuse to get vaccinated. Tankersley noted that the hospital system in recent weeks has held several community vaccination events where nobody showed up. Garcia Fernandez said the most significant problem is many people are misinformed about the safety and purpose of vaccines. A vaccination doesn't guarantee that someone won't get COVID, but it does significantly reduce the risk. I've heard all the excuses, quote, I've heard all the excuses, end quote, Garcia Fernandez said. Quote, there's so many conspiracy theories out there. People believe the vaccine will change their DNA, that it's a way for the government to place a tracking chip into people. Others say, I'm not sick, or I'm young, I don't need it, end quote. Health officials like Garcia Fernandez say those excuses could come back to haunt people because the Delta variant is proving to attack all ages, and it's more aggressive and faster acting. Like COVID-19, symptoms for the Delta variant can include fatigue, shortness of breath, coughing, a fever, chills, and diarrhea. The Delta variant can overtake a person's immune system within a few days, Garcia Fernandez said. Quote, it's a very painful death, end quote, she said. Quote, your lungs begin to scar and you feel like you can't breathe. By the time you're placed on a ventilator, we've already had to induce coma. Your heart still can't get enough oxygen, so it stops and you die. It's an agonizing death for the patient and their loved ones who have to watch from a window as you die, end quote. The low rate of people vaccinated in Ector County is extremely frustrating to health officials because they know many deaths and illnesses can be avoided. Quote, morale is already low from 2020, end quote, Garcia Fernandez said. Quote, people are tired and don't want to go through this again. Yes, physically we're prepared if COVID numbers go up like they did last year, but emotionally, psychologically, it affects staff. Nobody wants to stand there and hold someone's hand while they die, end quote. Camp captures fun of engineering. Youngsters attending University of Texas Permian Basin's engineering camp are figuring out what form of the discipline they like best by getting some hands-on experience. Funded by the UTPB College of Engineering and XTO Energy, the camp is for middle and high school students. Middle school students are attending this week, and it will be the high school students' turn next week. Altogether, 74 children are expected to attend. Masut Yeruku, this year's camp coordinator, said these could be future engineering students. Currently, they are getting a glimpse of petroleum, chemical, mechanical, and electrical engineering. Students work directly with professors, and student workers help out. At the end of the program, Yeruku said students will be asked what type of engineering fits them best. Quote, I think the camp is a really fun place. We got to learn a lot of things and meet a bunch of new people. And I also learned a lot of new things from the camp, honestly. End quote. 10-year-old David Nana said. Nana, who will be going into sixth grade, said his father, George, is the dean of the College of Engineering. Ubadir Onyemobi, a student worker, said the experience has been great so far. Quote, the kids are really smart for their age. End quote. Onyemobi said. The students also communicate and socialize well. Quote, I'm impressed because when I was their age, I wasn't too smart, so I'm pretty sure we are going to have better engineers, end quote. Onyemobi said. Matthew Ortega, an 11-year-old going into sixth grade, said he wanted to sign up for the camp because he's gotten to learn so much. Quote, all the science and math stuff. I get to learn new things, so that means I'll be ahead, and then I'll know everything I'll need to know, end quote, Ortega said. Assistant Professor Omar Begg said he had about 20 students in his lab Wednesday. Begg taught a robotics class in the last camp, which was virtual. Quote, so today we are going to conduct a new subject, which is about electrical circuits. We are teaching the students, and we have designed an experiment for the students on electrical circuits, end quote, Begg said. He added that the students were actively participating, and he saw some future engineers in the group. Quote, due to their interest, I am very confident that they will be joining us in coming years, end quote, Begg said. He added that it's important to get youngsters interested in engineering at a young age. Quote, they are building their bases right now, so it is very important for them to understand what options they have for their future. By joining the summer camps, these options are exposed to them, so accordingly, they can decide in consultation with their parents and their interest as well, end quote, Begg said. Benjamin Wills, a 13-year-old going into eighth grade, said this was the first time he had attended engineering camp. Quote, I think it's pretty interesting, end quote, said Wills, who turns 14 in October. Asked what surprised him, Will said, quote, we definitely had this chemical reaction in a smaller bottle that had carbon dioxide expanding from pressure, and the cap came up and it pretty much flew, end quote, he said. He said his father is a petroleum engineer, so the field is something he may want to pursue. Cooper Diggins, an 11-year-old going into sixth grade, said he wants to be an engineer when he grows up. Quote, because I love math and science, and I guess it just suits me, end quote. Jurian Smith is 12 and going into eighth grade. He is enjoying himself so far. Quote, I thought I could learn a bunch of new things such as Ohm's law and understand more about chemical reactions, end quote, Smith said. Quote, I was surprised that we would be messing and touching the stuff and making miniature rockets and stuff, end quote, Smith said. Yeruku said many of the campers' parents are engineers, but the camp will give them some idea of what each discipline is about. Olivia Lee, 13, who is going into eighth grade, said she thought the camp was fun and she has learned a lot. Quote, I wanted to become a chemical engineer and I thought this camp would be exciting, end quote, Lee said. She said nuclear engineering is also interesting to her. George Nana, the engineering dean, said the XTO project started a couple of days ago. Quote, we are actively involved with experiential learning opportunities for both middle school as well as our high school. This year, we have about 74 students that are participating. The goal is to expose them to every facet of engineering, from chemical, electrical, petroleum, and mechanical. So hopefully they will register here and become engineers and in turn provide the workforce that is needed for this region. So it's an excellent opportunity for the region, as well as for the university, end quote, Nana said. Quick hits. MCH Farmers Market. The Medical Center Health System Farmers Market has been scheduled from 9 a.m. to noon Saturday, August 28th and September 25th on MCH campus, corner of 2nd Street and Golder Avenue. There will be locally grown produce, local products, cooking demonstrations, kids' activities, live music, and more. For more information about being a vendor in the farmers markets, contact Susan Thornton at sthornton@echd.org or 432-640-2347. Visit mchodessa.com/community/farmers-market. Healthy Kids Event. Odessa Regional Medical Center has scheduled a health event, a Health Kids Event for students ages 4 through 18 from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday at Complete Care Eastridge, 7102 Eastridge Road. The event will include back-to-school vaccinations and school physicals. All insurance is accepted, including Medicaid and self-pay discounts. Food will be provided by Frank's Barbecue. For more information, call 432-550-0048. Visit tinyurl.com/kwj7vy7r. From Staff Reports. Obituary. Fabian G. Leha, Odessa, Texas. Fabian G. Leha, age 41, passed away on Sunday, July 18, 2021. Funeral services will be at 10 o'clock a.m. Friday, July 23, 2021, at First Baptist Church in Idaloo. Interment will follow at Idaloo Cemetery. Visitation will be from 9 o'clock a.m. to 8 o'clock p.m., Thursday, July 22, 2021, at Moore Rose Funeral Home in Idaloo. Arrangements are under the personal care of Moore Rose Funeral Home in Idaloo. Fabian was born May 17, 1980, in Slayton, Texas, to Martin Leha Sr. and Sylvia Garcia Leha. He was preceded in death by his paternal grandmother, Maria Alejo Trevino, his maternal grandparents, Manuel Garcia Gomez and Pura Castaneda Valdez, and two uncles, Sergio Villarreal and Juan Garcia. Those left to cherish Fabian's memory are all of his immediate family, including his wife, Cynthia Leha, his children, Andrea Eliza Leha, age 16, and Thomas Andrew Leha, age 12. His parents, Martin Sr. and Sylvia Leha, his older brother, Martin J. Leha, his sister-in-law, Irma L. Leha, and his two nephews, Matthew I. Leha and Moses I. Leha, his mother-in-law and father-in-law, Jose Luis Najera and Manuela Gonzalez Najera, his brother-in-law, Luis E. Najera, and his children, Zoe G. Najera and Daniel J. Najera, and his brother-in-law, Samuel D. Najera, and his wife, Denise Vincent Najera, and their children, Jaime Isaac Ramirez, David I. Najera, and Samuel Jacob Najera. Death Notices. Krista Lee Cervantes, Odessa. Krista Lee Cervantes, 41, of Odessa, died Tuesday, July 20th, 2021, in Odessa. Funeral service will be held at 4 p.m. July 24th, 2021, American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home. Father Tim Hayter is officiating. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home, Crematory of Midland. Elva Molinar Espinoza, Odessa. Elva Molinar Espinoza, 83, of Odessa, died Wednesday, July 21st, 2021, in Odessa. Funeral service will be held at 1 p.m. July 27th, 2021, Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Pastor Mark Bristow is officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Ava Nell Teague, Odessa. Ava Nell Teague, 92, died Wednesday, July 21st, 2021, in Odessa. Services are pending with Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home of Odessa. Jean Marie Kane Vandergriff, Odessa. Jean Marie Kane Vandergriff, 69, of Odessa, died Sunday, July 18th, 2021, in Odessa. Celebration of Life will be held at 2 p.m. July 23rd, 2021, Highland United Methodist Church. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, July 22nd. Midland Health urges vaccinations. CEO says Delta variant already here, but vaccines key in stopping outbreaks. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. Quote, quoting one of our physicians we were talking to this week, you can't underestimate the difficulty, the contagious nature of this particular Delta variant. If you're not vaccinated, you will get the Delta variant. It is as simple and straightforward as that. I can't recommend enough that you go out and get a vaccination. End quote. Those were the words from Midland Health CEO Russell Myers leading off the Midland United Command Team conference call on Wednesday. His message wasn't about stopping the variant from arriving in Midland. It's too late for that, he said. It has arrived, and the spike of cases is underway. That impact includes an increase of 4 patients at Midland Memorial Hospital around July 4th to a COVID-19 census of 24 on Wednesday. 5 patients in critical care and 4 patients on ventilators. The range of ages of hospitalized COVID patients is 25 to 93. 75% of the patients are from Midland. 87% of patients are unvaccinated. Vaccination is the key, according to Myers and Dr. Larry Wilson, Vice President for Medical Affairs for Midland Health. They said 3 patients currently in Midland Memorial are vaccinated. They were described as elderly and frail. Wilson later stated that as of the 1,635 COVID-19 patients admitted to MMH because of COVID-19, only 4 were vaccinated, and the mortality rate among those 4 is non-existent. Quote, so people don't get hospitalized with the infection if they're vaccinated, and if they are hospitalized, they survive, Wilson said. With the unvaccinated population, it's a very different story. I think that's a really important thing to recognize, end quote. Other statistics noted beyond the 500% increase in COVID patients included that the number of breakthrough cases is 39, but that case risk among the vaccinated inside Midland County is 0.07%. The unvaccinated population is 30 times more likely to be infected. Myers also said that of the tests sent to the state lab since June 14th, 64% have come back as positive for the Delta variant. Quote, we expect that that number will rise as the newest results are confirmed, Myers said. Vaccine hesitancy in Midland County. Midland health officials said the Delta variant is particularly harmful in communities where the vaccinated percentage of the population remains low. That, they said, describes Midland County, where 37% of the eligible population is fully vaccinated. That percentage is close to Ector County, officials said, but lags behind more populated counties like Harris or Houston, Dallas and Bexar County, San Antonio, where 50+% are vaccinated. Myers also said more than 60% are vaccinated in El Paso, and some rural communities like Presidio are as high as 90%. Quote, 37.7% is very, very low and very poor, Myers said, and it leaves us very vulnerable to further spikes in the disease, as well as to being the site of further mutation development as more and more diseases are present in the community. Vaccination is absolutely essential if we're going to adequately combat this disease in general, end quote. Myers, Wilson, and other leaders in the Midland United Command Team said vaccination shouldn't be about politics. Midland Mayor Patrick Peyton asked those in Midland County, which overwhelmingly supported Donald Trump in the last election, to remember that it was the Trump administration which came up with Operation Warp Speed program to develop and distribute vaccines across the nation. Impact beyond public health. Last week, there were 111 COVID-19 cases reported inside Midland County, the most since the first full week of April. However, the COVID spike is having an impact beyond the public health. Myers said those areas impacted included more strict visitation procedures at Midland Memorial. Also, there are issues with facilities, costs having to do with putting COVID wards together, and the impact on worn-out staff. Myers expected extra help will be needed, including the recruitment of travel nurses and other medical officials. He said it is possible that should the spike intensify, that the hospital would again limit procedures that could take place inside Midland Memorial. To the greater community, a Delta variant spike is likely to warrant the need for those not vaccinated to observe social distancing practices and consider wearing a mask. Midland ISD officials stated Wednesday that Governor Greg Abbott's executive order will prevent the district from being able to put a mask mandate into place. Officials, though, said the district will recommend vaccinations for eligible students and mask wearing for all students. Those recommendations were put in place after consulting with Midland health officials. Rob Nett to run for re-election to council. Candidate adds to an increasingly crowded race for at-large seats. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. Spencer Rob Nett just celebrated 7 years on the Midland City Council, and he told a reporter Telegram he is excited to campaign for another term. Rob Nett has filed to run for re-election for one of the two at-large citywide positions on the seven-member City Council. He joins a crowded field for those two seats. At least six have filed or announced their respective candidacies for the November 2nd at-large race. Also on the ballot are seats in District 1, generally North Midland, and District 2, generally East and South Midland. But winning at-large races is something Rob Nett has accomplished before. In 2018, he collected 15,544 votes, or 47%, nearly matching the combined total of the second and third place finishers. Rob Nett says he still enjoys representing the residents of Midland and is having fun working with residents, city staff, and council members alike. In terms of current uninterrupted service, Rob Nett also ranks second only to Scott Defford. That experience includes multi-year projects like the new animal shelter in East Midland, the immensely popular Centennial Park downtown, and wastewater plant project, a partnership with Pioneer Natural Resources. Big projects require council members with staying power and longevity, especially those that last 4 to 6 years from conceptual stage to completion, Rob Nett said. He expects future projects will require that type of knowledge, specifically of what Midlanders demand. He told the reporter Telegram that parks will take center stage over the next few years. He said the upcoming budget will push more revenue from oil and gas development inside the city into parks across the city, even beyond the highly publicized Hogan Park transformation. Rob Nett also has been vocal about the need for partnerships with business, foundations, and nonprofit sector to make larger capital projects happen. He expects other future projects will include the development of a regional fire and police training center, possibly a second road bond, and help from the city to bring a reliable water supply to county residents. He said now is the time for the city and county to work together on the needs all Midland County residents, including those that live inside the city of Midland. Those who have filed or announced their respective candidacies for the at-large election are Rob Nett, Dustin Johnson, Michael Trost, Robin Poole, Russ Schumann, and Dan Corrales. The Midland City Secretary's Office reports that the filing period will take place from July 19th to August 16th. To see the map of City Council districts, go to https://www.midlandtexas.gov/238/midland-city-council. Trail Park opens to outdoor enthusiasts for $30 annual fee. Private-public partnership made trail system in Southeast Midland possible. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. City leaders provided a glimpse of what bicyclists could expect with the opening of the Midland Trail Park in Southeast Midland. Council members Jack Ladd and Lori Blong gave the reporter Telegram a look at Midland Trail Park, which they stated is now open to hikers, runners, bicyclists, and other visitors who have gone to https://pbbatx.com to pay a $30 annual membership fee, which helps to defray the ongoing maintenance costs of the facility. Quote, other interested parties can make charitable donations to the Permian Basin Bicycle Association on its website to help in the construction of new trails and skills park facilities, the city leaders noted. Quote, Jack Ladd and I first visited the lake near Harris Training Field in April of 2020, Blong wrote in an email to the Reporter Telegram. Continuing the quote, we knew immediately that this was a space Midlanders need to see and enjoy. The partnership we have undertaken with the Permian Basin Bicycling Association is another in an effective series of public-private partnerships through the City of Midland. Our community is ripe with opportunities to take what we already have, to invest time and money, and to elevate our spaces to improve the quality of life for all Midlanders. We cannot wait to see how Midland will enjoy this wonderful facility. End quote. The Harris Fields Fire Training Facility is located north of Farm to Market Road 307. The city provided these points for the Harris Field lease agreement between the city and Permian Basin Bicycle Association. Agreement was approved by the Midland City Council on January 26, effective date of February 1st. Agreement has a 10-year initial term and may be extended for another 10-year term upon the consent of the city and the PBBA. Agreement provides for a leased premises of 135 acres. Agreement provides for the development of a recreational off-road cycling facility with additional amenities such as running, hiking trails, and disc golf. Any other use of the property is prohibited. The PBBA is required to cover all improvement costs, and the city will assume ownership of all improvements upon the termination or expiration of the agreement. Major donors include Stephen Mitchell, president of the PBBA. Quote, none of this project would have been possible without Stephen's vision for the project or his organization and leadership, Blong wrote. The following is a list of other major donors to the Midland Trail Park project. West Texas Trail Alliance, Diamondback Energy, Carrie and Jill Brown, Bob and Elizabeth Davenport, SM Energy, VIM Racing, J.D. King Corporation, LOA Land Development, Tech Logics, Plains Pipeline, Permian Basin Bicycle Association, Midland Power Sports, Bill Williams Tire, and the City of Midland.
Hello, this is Cindy, continuing to read from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday. MISD to recommend masks and other practices, by Stuart Doreen. Midland ISD will recommend that students wear masks inside schools and that eligible students receive the COVID vaccine when the school year begins in early August, officials said Wednesday. It was mentioned during a press conference to address the spike in cases occurring in Midland that Governor Greg Abbott has ordered that school districts cannot mandate masks, but school officials told the Reporter Telegram they are recommending the wearing of masks, social distancing practices, and vaccinations for those students that are eligible to receive one. Midland ISD officials told the Reporter Telegram that decisions about recommendations about masks and vaccines and other best practices happened following conversations with Midland health officials. School officials also made clear during the press conference that the district is focused on in-person learning and that there will not be an online academy and hybrid scheduling because of the new spike in COVID cases. All students will be required to come to campus, with the exception to students participating in an online program at Coleman High School. MISD has continued to actively monitor COVID-19 data throughout the summer, Superintendent Angelica Ramsey stated in a message to the Reporter Telegram, we are working collaboratively with Midland Health and our other governmental partners. Due to the governor's executive order, schools cannot mandate masks. But due to the increase in cases with the variant, we will recommend masks, especially for those students and staff who have underlying conditions, are unvaccinated, and those who have loved ones that may fall within those two categories. Students who test positive for COVID will still be required to follow CDC protocols before being able to return to campus. MISD officials also said that adult volunteers will be allowed back on campus to help. If you're interested in volunteering this year, we'll still have to get a background check through our Education Foundation, said Public Information Officer Ilana Ladd. And when you come up to the school, you will still need to fill out a screening questionnaire, and that is just one measure to keep our schools as safe as possible. Vaccine opportunities include 8:30 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. Thursday at the Legacy High School Youth Center building, and then next week at Midland High School. Ladd said students need to be at least 12 years old to get vaccinated, and parents must accompany students who are 12 to 17. Mayor says position had integral role in his decision to get vaccine by Stuart Doreen. Mayor Patrick Payton said Wednesday he has received the first of two COVID vaccination shots. He also told those on the Midland Unified Command Team conference call that if he wasn't the mayor, he wouldn't go through the vaccination process. When asked about that specific point, the mayor told community leaders, reporters, and those following online, "That is exactly what I said." The mayor was part of a Midland Unified Command Team conference call that dealt with the impact COVID was again having in the community, especially the Delta variant, and the need for Midland County residents to be vaccinated to ward off the threat. Payton admitted he's had vaccine hesitancy and that he is sick and tired of hearing data on one side and data on the other side. He also offered blunt comments about his reasons for going through the vaccination process, he said. "I didn't get vaccinated because I'm worried about my health," Payton said. "I got vaccinated because I was worried about the health of people around me. And the fact of the matter is, if you want to be even more blunt about it, if I wasn't the mayor, I probably wouldn't have gotten vaccinated at this point. It just comes down to whether I'm going to be the same person I was when I had to say, 'I don't want to wear a mask, I'm going to wear a mask.' And if we're going to have any ability to break through some form of hesitancy that we need to break through to get another tranche of people vaccinated, I made that decision." The mayor also stated his exhaustion with the politics behind the vaccination debate, saying that even the terms unvaccinated and vaccinated, which he said seemed to be dangerous and fighting words. Payton reminded those on the conference call and others watching the press conference online that it was President Trump who initiated Operation Warp Speed, the development and distribution of COVID-19 vaccines. President Trump also has received the vaccine. He said people in one of the most Republican areas of the state, considering if vaccines are right for them, should remember the former president's involvement. "It was the Trump administration that got this thing going," Payton said. "And so, for a region that has supported President Trump more than probably any other region in the country, let's go ahead and participate in this vaccination process that President Trump got started. If you need any other reasons, just say this is about what he has done, and it's not about what another administration has done or has not done." Payton also showed his support to Midland health officials on vaccine issues and said he wanted to be part of the process of getting the message out that as many people as possible need to get vaccinated because they believe it's the right thing for you to do.
Hello, this is Michael with another inside article from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, published Thursday, July 22nd. Museum to host reception of Midland Natives artwork by J.C. Lewis. Reclaiming the Casserole, new works by Sarah Drescher and The Long Horizon by Katie Moretta are now on view at the Museum of the Southwest. The opening reception for Reclaiming the Casserole is from 5 to 7 p.m. Thursday. Drescher is a Midland native completing her master's in fine art and studio art at Texas Tech University. Drescher has exhibited at the Museum of the Southwest before, but this is a different iteration of her work, according to museum curator Matthew Ward. In the past, she has done more large-scale abstract expressionism and has done portraiture, But this is a different direction with this exhibit, he said. She adopted the casserole dish as what some would view as traditional, domestic, and feminine. She has added text and design, which add statements to each piece. Drescher said in her artist statement that casserole dishes can be seen in some households and societies as icons of traditional expectations of women in the home. Mass marketing has directed overtly feminine imagery, like flowers and produce, as decoration for these containers to encourage consumption while perpetuating traditional roles in society. In this piece, I am leaning into the feminine imagery on casserole dishes in order to reclaim the power of the feminine that provides nourishment and a stable foundation for society and families. This intense imagery is also meant to emphasize that women are more than our bodies and the limits of traditional expectations. The Long Horizon features one continuous piece that is 1 inch tall and 70 feet long. The work wraps around the room. This is the first time the entire piece has been displayed. Ward said they created a bingo game to go along with the exhibit. Magnifying glasses and bingo sheets are provided to find a Whataburger, silo, oil tank, pump jack, and more in the Long Horizon. The piece captures the expanse of West Texas, which the Austin-based artist was interested in when she moved from the East Coast. There is a play between the vastness of it, but also her very small scale, which forces viewers to get up close and study the details, she said. Because of her small scale, she is making us, the viewer, larger by comparison. Here's a sidebar that accompanies the previous story. Upcoming events at MSW. Opening reception, Reclaiming the Casserole, New Works by Sarah Drescher, 5 to 7 p.m. Thursday. Art Geometry Family Friday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., July 23rd. Angel and the Bad Men, 7 to 9 p.m., July 25th. Reopening Septemberfest submissions, July 29th through the 30th. Family Sci Friday Night Movie, Tron Classic, 5 to 8 p.m., July 30th. Septemberfest Under the Desert Sky, September 10th and 11th.
Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter Telegram on Thursday, July 22nd. Cecilia G. Lopez, age 92, of Midland, passed away on July 17th, surrounded by her family. Cecilia was born on May 12, 1929, in Falls City, Texas, to Guadalupe and Cecilia Garcia. After graduating from high school, she married Domingo R. Lopez I on November 6, 1949. Together, they had six children, Julia Oguin, Monica Sosa, Linda Quiroz, Domingo Lopez II, Polo Lopez, and Jerry Lopez. From her children, her family grew into 17 grandchildren, 53 great-grandchildren, and 8 great-great-grandchildren. She was preceded in death by her husband, Domingo R. Lopez I, her son, Domingo Lopez II, her daughter-in-law, Delma Lopez, and grandchildren Gary Oguin, Susanna Oguin, and Eric Lopez. Funeral Mass is scheduled for Thursday, July 22nd at 10 a.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. In lieu of flowers, offerings of all kinds are welcome. Funeral service is under the direction of Llewellyn Garcia Pepkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin at nts-online.net, or you can visit the website at www.llewellyngarciapipkinfh.com. Darkus Marcel Sutherland, age 96, passed away peacefully on July 20th in Odessa. She was born on December 11, 1924, in Grice, Texas, to Marion Harrison and Ethel Burnett Harrison. Marcel graduated from Harmony High School in 1942 at the age of 16. While a nursing student, she met Charles Anderson Sutherland, Jr. when he was a patient at Providence Hospital. After a courtship, she and Chuck were married on October 24, 1947, in Waco, Texas, thus beginning a 57-year love story. Marcel was preceded in death by her parents, husband Chuck, brother Herschel Harrison, and sister Mary Jo Moody. She is survived by her daughter Patty Thrasher and husband Bill of Odessa, grandson Brian Thrasher and wife Stephanie of Flower Mound, Texas, and granddaughter Amy Henry and husband Tyler of Odessa. She is also survived by 5 great-grandchildren. Burial will be held at Rest Haven Memorial Park in Midland on July 22nd at 9 a.m. A memorial service will follow interment at 11 a.m. July 22nd at Stonegate Fellowship in Odessa. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made to Books Are the Beginning, 2625 Rolling Oaks, San Marcos, Texas, 78666, or Home Hospice of Odessa. Francine Murphy Dawson, age 84 of Midland, passed away on July 18th. A memorial service will be held at 11 a.m. on Friday, July 23rd, at Grace Presbyterian Church, 2801 North Garfield Street in Midland, 79705. Fran was born on April 22, 1937, in Van Sant County, Texas, to James Allen and Iberia Murphy. She married the love of her life, Bob, on June 1, 1957 in Canton, Texas. In 1962, the couple moved to Midland. Fran and Bob had 1 son, Bob Dawson Jr., and 2 grandchildren, Jeffrey Dawson and Ellie Dawson. She is survived by her son, Bob, her grandchildren, Jeffrey and Ellie, and her sister-in-law, Jewel Murphy. She is preceded in death by her husband and by her parents, her brother James Murphy, and her brother and sister-in-law, Ethel A. and Joan Dawson. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made to the Midland Memorial Hospital Auxiliary, Gifts of Hope Incorporated, or Grace Presbyterian Church. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Alma Faye Bell, age 72, of Midland, passed away on Sunday, July 11th. A memorial service will take place on Friday, July 23rd at 11 a.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home Chapel. She is survived by her mother, Fayreen King, 2 sons, Clarence King and Jeremy Michael Bell, 2 brothers, 3 sisters, 5 grandchildren, and numerous nieces and nephews.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.